come together and study again that song whenever, you know, there's certain songs you relate to people or events or places you've been, and that's one of those I think a lot of times about Dad, that he would sing that song a lot. That was one of his favorites, and what better thing to sing about than heaven and getting to go there. And of course, that's why we're here, is trying to please God and to go to heaven when this life's over with. Tonight what I want to do, though, is I want to look at the continuation. About 2 weeks ago, we talked about humanism. And as I gave that lesson, I pointed out that humanism is a philosophy. They acknowledge the fact that there's a faith that they have, and there are various organizations that are dedicated to the promotion of that. That many universities for years have been influenced by humanist teaching and humanist doctrine. And that has really permeated throughout society. And so this lesson here is going to deal with the fact that humanism searches for morality. And that we've often heard the phrase situation ethics. We kind of understand that that's talked about in various ways. And that's the idea of how are you going to judge what's right or wrong? Now, what standard do you have? And I saw this cartoon a while back. Hopefully you can read that. But it says, where are your principles? And the other fellow there says, I don't know. You always change, always moving things. And that is the idea that, you know, the standard people have seems to fluctuate, seems to change over years and years. And that's because, really, when you take out God out of the picture, what basis do you have for any kind of standard morality? Now, humanism is not new. In fact, in this quote here, points out about Humanist Manifesto, they acknowledge that the humanist traces roots from ancient China, classical Greece, and Rome, through the Renaissance and the Enlightenment to the scientific revolution of the modern world. And that is what they are promoting here, is what many cultures before have heard, and simply given a new name. But the idea, again, is that what kind of standard are one we judge being right or wrong? And as you think about that, that comes to the very basic question, okay, what is moral? And how you define what's moral? Moral itself comes from the Latin word mores, and it's that in meaning habits or customs. And so morality is a character of being in accordance with one principle of right or wrong. In other words, we may disagree with somebody as far as what they judge being right or wrong. But are they living by that standard? Are they consistent with that standard? That's the idea of morality, is that, you know, I look out here and maybe I see a group such as the Amish. Now, I may disagree with their interpretation of the Bible and why they're doing certain things, but when I see them perhaps practicing what they're teaching, what they believe, I can understand, well, you know, they're being consistent with that. And then the other idea of ethics, and that's a Greek word meaning character. And also ethics deals with how we ought to behave, what we should be doing. And as you look this year, again, we come back to, okay, what is morally ethical? What is right in society? And the person of the Bible, a person who believes in God, we can look at our Bible, we say, okay, here is our standard. That we understand God defines for us what's right and wrong, what's good and bad, what's sin and non-sinful. And that becomes basically our background as far as how we judge everything else. In fact, the Bible claims that over in Psalms 19, verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, they rejoice the heart. The command of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. And we don't look at the Bible and say, okay, God was unethical when he said to do this. Or God was immoral when he told the children of Israel to do something. Or when we look in the Bible and we find it says what we need to be doing today, we don't say, well, God is wrong. As far as you believe in the Bible, you believe in God, you understand the Bible outlines for us the idea of right or wrong. And therefore, we are to obey his word. We're to do what God says to do. And when we don't do what God says to do, then we are sinning against him and perhaps sinning against our fellow men. And so that's where I come from. That's how I understand the Bible teaches about us. But however, when you take God out of the picture, the humanist says, well, you know, there is really no standard morality. There's no absolutes with this here, that they acknowledge the fact that morality does exist, strangely enough. Now, I'm not sure if some humans today would actually agree with that statement, but at least in times past, when you have talked to humanists and you say, well, you all don't believe in any kind of standard right or wrong, but they will argue, says, yes, we do. We understand that there are things that are wrong. And so they acknowledge that, but they would say, but the standard really isn't. That there are things that are right or wrong, but there's no set standard. In fact, religion is immoral, and religion is basically wrong because it tries to make us all live by the same standard. So when we read the Bible, we find, for instance, where it says, thou shalt not commit murder. Now keep in mind, murder is to take an innocent life. And we read there, thou shalt not murder, that they say, well, you know, that is a standard that doesn't really apply to everybody like. And perhaps you can hear them talk about the situation, for instance, what about if you are on the lifeboat? That kind of situation where you have X number of seats. When you have 8 seats and you have 16 people and only 8 can survive, so you decide who's going to die. And they say, you know, that standard right there, it's okay to kill somebody. It's okay to actually condemn somebody to death because of the fact that, you know, who am I to say it's wrong if I was on the lifeboat? Or maybe the idea, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, all those kind of things, that's too general. That religion is wrong because it makes these vast general rules that we should not apply to everybody like. In fact, they would say, you know what, and they would point out the fact that religious people do bad things. That a lot of bad things happen in times past. War has been fought all in the name of God. And that you find that occasionally somebody that claims to be religious, that maybe they have murdered. Maybe they have committed adultery. Maybe they have stolen things. And we, you know, there are Christians or people that claim to believe in God that are in prisons. And so they look at that and say, well, religious people do bad things. And then not only that, but also they would say, not only that, but religious people turn around and blame God for their bad things. The whole idea of Calvinism. When you start thinking about it, it is this idea that man is made in God's image, but we are totally sinful creatures because of our sin, Adam and Eve's sin, and that became part of our nature. So when I do something bad, it's because God made us that way. And there are people that would say, as the old saying by Flip Wilson, that the devil made me do it. Well, there are people that would say, well, God made me do that. And in fact, they could point out to us that there's all kinds of different doctrines, doctrine of predestination. Again, many of the religious groups around us will say that everything that we do has been predestined by God. In fact, you can read here from the Presbyterian Confession of Faith. And they said that God from all eternity did by the most wise and holy counsel of his own will, freely and unchangeably ordained whatever, whatsoever comes to pass. Now think about that for a second. That he has ordained whatever comes to pass. So therefore, just kind of use a modern illustration about this. The other night, whenever Will Smith got up on that stage there and slapped Chris Rock in the face, that there would be the predestination to say, you know what, that was because God predestined that. If I go out and commit adultery, God predestined that. God predestined everything is basically what the doctrine says. And not only that, but also in the Presbyterian Confession of Faith, they said by this sin, and they're referring back to the sin of the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve took of the forbidden fruit, that in the forbidden fruit, they, our first parents, fell from their original righteousness and communion with God, and so became dead in sin and wholly defiled in all the faculties and parts of soul and body. And going down, say, from this original corruption, whereby we are utterly indisposed, disabled, and made opposite to all good, wholly inclined to all evil, to proceed all actual transgressions. You read that and just kind of think about that. That really says, if I decide I want to be good, I can't. If I decide I want to be a righteous person, I really can't because what? Because I'm totally disposed to all evil and every transgression. It's literally what that saying is. And humans are not ignorant of this kind of doctrine. No, they point that out to us. That you're saying that God made us that way. That's why humans often say that they are trying to liberate us from the evils of religion. And so that's the idea that they promote. Now, how do you answer that, first of all? And one thing is they know is that religious people can do wrong things. That sometimes, yes, they do bad things. And in fact, what we find that a lot of times people can do bad things even in the name of God. A good example of that is the Jews. The Jews did all kinds of things in Romans 2nd chapter. Then they, in Romans 1st chapter, they looked around at the Gentiles. They saw the bad things they are doing. In Romans 2nd chapter, we find all the bad things the Jews were doing. And it says, you therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You priests that man should not steal, do you steal? You say, do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You have hoard idols, do you rob temples? You who make your boast in the law, do you desire God to break the law? And he's just pointing out their hypocrisy. That they, yes, there are people that are religious that are hypocritical, that they are, you know, religious hypocrites. And we should acknowledge the fact that just because somebody claims to be religious does not mean that they are actually a good person. It depends on if they're actually doing what God says or not. And not only that, but also each of us chooses for ourselves. The Bible says each of us are free moral agents. Now we choose what kind of life we're going to live. And we have the first case of that really, well not really the first case, one of the cases in Genesis the 4th chapter. And you recall that that's when Cain and Abel offered a sacrifice to God. God accepted Abel's, rejected Cain's. But what did God tell Cain? He told Cain that sin lies at the door, but he can master. He's the one in control of what he's going to do in that situation. And so, you know, God, you would think that if God had made Cain totally disposed to do all evil, that God would have told Cain, don't worry about it, Cain, because, you know, you're just being who you are. You're just being the kind of person I made you that way. That's not what he said. He said, you are the one that chooses what you're going to do about the situation. Later on, when we have Joshua, children of Israel, and you recall there, Joshua 24th chapter, in verse 15, and he says, and sees evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves the day whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the mount or the river, or the gods of Amorites whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now when Joshua said, you choose this day whom you're going to serve, was that really just a facade? Was that really just an anti-statement there by saying that, but then say, well, you really can't choose though? You know, and the Bible, when it talks about us choosing what to do, gives us this idea, at least me and the idea, that we make choices. We have the ability to make choices. And so in that, each one of us is called to do certain things. Each one of us, for instance, is called to believe in the gospel. Now that's something that we decide for ourselves. When I read through the Bible, when you read through the Bible, when somebody else reads through the Bible, they have that choice to make. Do I believe what the Bible says? Each one of us is called upon to confess Jesus Christ. Now, is that really true? Or some people over here may be like, well, I want to confess, but you know what? God has made me where I can. I just cannot confess because God made me that way. Each one of us is called upon to repent of our sins and be baptized. Each one of those things anybody can do, and at the same time, anybody can refuse to do. And that's because we are free moral agents. We have the ability to choose what we're going to do. And the Presbyterian Confession of Faith is totally erroneous in that. And so that would be some of the answers I would give them, at least, on this idea of them when they turn around and blast religion. But then another thing is, this is a big question though, is, okay, they talk about this idea of ethics and morality, but why even bother with that? Why bother talking about ethics and morality? I'm going to read you some here, and this comes from Humanist and Global Ethics, Humanist Today, Volume 12. And there it says, we have some consciousness about making choices. And now that consciousness also comes the responsibility of making the best choice possible. Now again, they say, we understand we are conscious individuals. We decide. You know, it's kind of like reality-wide concept. We are have the ability to think about thinking, even. And so we are bound to make the best choice possible. Again, why bother to do that? And they give some various reasons by that. And here's some of their logic. Here's some of the reasons they give. One, as they said, is that ethics is a natural phenomenon. And though it doesn't, often doesn't look like a common one. And so it's kind of like one of those things they look at and they say, you know, we don't really know. It's just kind of out there. Okay, it's a natural phenomenon. As you go on down, they said, and so in this case here, they said basically, just because. Maybe that's the best way of phrasing it. Just because we have it, that's all we can say. Another is, they said, these help our ancestors to live successfully. And so they kind of put this in the evolutionary process. Now the reason is wrong to kill is because of survival, because we have to survive. And therefore there has to be some kind of rules for survival, even of the fittest, they would say. And so they can't say, well, it's evolutionary. And then also they would say ethics may be part of the evolutionary process. Again, you know, it may be something, although they cannot explain how or why it's part of the evolutionary process, but maybe just part of that whole process there. And then they would say also, they said, there is the core of humanist ethics. And here's the core of humanist ethics. The preservation, or even more strongly, the nutrients of human dignity and worth. And so I guess when you kind of phrase it like this, they said, because we're on the high part of the evolutionary chain, that we have somehow developed this idea of ethics, of morality. And so that's kind of how they put it there, human dignity and worth. And then also they said, and ask us to enlist the best in others, and thereby in yourself. Which really is kind of like, isn't that the golden rule? Treat others as you want to be treated. Do others as you want to do to you. And that's really what they're talking about right there, is that is, you want other people to treat you well, so you treat them well also. And you're doing your best when you do that. It's kind of how they phrase it right there. And so we learn and look at that there. Perhaps one of the things they also say to us is that they said, I've also answered that maybe human instinct. We appear to have an inborn sense that tells us that right is better than wrong, a sense that often helps us move beyond our narrow immediate self-interest. Now again, there's really not a reason for this. They simply observe that, you know, when they look at people, most of us do have a sense of wanting to feel good about ourselves. And most people have this idea of something's right, something's wrong. When we do that which is right, we feel better about it. And so they notice that part. And then finally they say, we learn to deal without the why. We don't know. We don't have to answer that question. We just know that there is something that's right and there's wrong. And so that's kind of how they leave it right there. And that is that we just kind of have that sense of right or wrong. And then also, they said, there really is no answer. Which is kind of what we've been getting at all along, isn't it? There is no answer. We never know for certain that our bother and be good will be worthwhile. And this here may be kind of the best way of summing it up. All of our bother and be good has little effect. What we do know is that choosing not to bother will also have an effect. And that is, okay, let's assume for instance, that there is no such thing as right or wrong. There is no such thing as morality. Our society, the world would develop into mass chaos. Could you imagine a world where everybody could kill each other, or you could steal from each other, or you could lie, or you could do whatever you want without any punishment at all? About what would happen. And they said, that's so bad that we cannot imagine that. Therefore, there has to be some kind of right and wrong. That's where they come up with here. And so as you look at it, I also said, why bother be good? Because only by trying will we know if it's worth it. And this is the last kind of statement right here. So the humanists would point out, okay, there's no really standard morality, but man still has that sense of right or wrong. Okay, that's kind of where they come to. So here's humanists' big question. That is, and this here is by a man by the name of George Gaylord Simpson. And he's an evolutionist at Harvard University. And here's what he says about it. He said, man is a result of purposeless and materialistic process. Now, does that make you feel good starting off right there? You don't have a reason to exist. There's not really a purpose behind life. Forget about it. Okay, that's where he starts off with. They did not but have him in mind. Nevertheless, good and evil, right and wrong, concepts irrelevant in nature except from the human viewpoint. Animals don't care about it. They don't think about right or wrong. It doesn't matter. It's they become real and pressing features of the whole cosmos as viewed by man. We're the only ones concerned about this. And the only possible way in which the cosmos can be viewed morally, because morals arise only in man. We're the only ones that have a sense of morality. It's how they, kind of where they come to. And so as kind of looking at it, they said, okay, so there's a need for morality. We have a need for it, but we're, again, no sane person will argue that absolute anything goes. The expression ought and ought not are as much part of the atheist vocabulary as anyone else's. We realize, one should not kill a fellow human being. One should not lie. One should not steal. We understand that. So, okay, that's kind of what, kind of how it looks there. Also, okay, so how about situation ethics? That's their answer. And what they say is, basically situation ethics, that we affirm that moral values derive the source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. In other words, we don't need God. Now, by autonomous, what they mean by that is independent. We talk about autonomous congregations where each one is independent of each other. Well, that's what they mean here. And that is every person is independent, and each one of us can decide whatever we think is right or wrong. So what's right for you and what's wrong for you doesn't apply to me. And we often hear somebody say, how dare you judge me? How dare you say that? And tell somebody they're wrong. Well, that's where it comes, some of what's come along here. Is that, okay, it's whatever you want. And then situational means what is normally considered wrong, maybe right under different circumstances. So it could be a case where we would say, okay, it's wrong, again, to do something. But under this particular situation, for you, it may be okay. Now, it still may be wrong for me because I'm autonomous. I'm different than you. But you see, we can't paint a big picture where everything's right and everything's wrong. Each one gets to decide what they want to do for themselves, basically, as what they're talking about here. And so that's not what their answer is here. And it just reminds me of the passage over in Joshua 21, verse 25, about the children of Israel. So in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. To the humans, whatever you consider to be right is right. Whatever I consider to be right is right. And really, we shouldn't judge each other in this whole idea of right or wrong. Now, again, when you look at this here, you just think about this idea that situation ethics is something that's being taught all the time. And if you look, turn on televisions, look at movies, read books, you'll find there's all kinds of situations given where we're almost emotionally cheering for the person that's actually going to do the wrong thing. You sympathize with them. And you may think, okay, in this situation, it's okay. And again, they may say, well, that's because who does it harm? Who does it hurt? Isaiah 5 verse 20 kind of describes this. It says, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And that is, a lot of times, situation ethics, the person actually doing the right thing is the wrong person, is doing evil. And on the other hand, the person doing something bad is actually looked at being the good person. And that's why Isaiah is talking about in this situation here. And we have to keep in mind as we read this here, when is the right to lie? Think about that for a second. When is it right to take the life against a person? When is it right to commit adultery? And situation ethics, again, would say, under certain situations, you may be okay. But let's just keep this in mind. One can never sin against God righteously. One can never be successful that sins against God. And a good situation of that is Abraham. And they would sometimes point out, well, Abraham, you know, Abraham, we announce Abraham lied because he feared for his life. This was Sarah, his wife. In Genesis 12 verse 11, and it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt, they said to Sarah, his wife, and then I know you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife. And they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say you are my sister, that may be well with me for your sake, that I may live because of you. And they will look at it and say, you know, Abraham lied there, and he was actually justified doing that. But think about this idea here, because situational ethics also said there's really, who's being harmed by it? Who's being hurt by it? Well, in this case here, we can say, well, you know, one person being hurt by that was Sarai. Because Sarah was basically abandoned. Sarah was actually, you start thinking about what happened to her, that she was taken to Pharaoh's household. Anything could have happened to her there. In Genesis 12, verse 15, the princess of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And while staying in Pharaoh's household, he put her in a position that she could have been raped in that situation right there, instead of standing up for her. Knowing that, but also when you look at it, he abandoned her, therefore. When you look at anything about the fact that everyone's going to gain for his life. And that is, if you look into verse 16, he treated Abram well for her sake. In other words, because he thought this was a possible wife for him. And he had a sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male, female slaves, female donkeys, and camels. Then he actually willing to give them to Abram. It wasn't just preservation here. He's actually prospering from this. And then only that, but also Abram's got trust in God. God told Abraham earlier what? He's going to show him the land and give him the land from his lineage. Be all these, he's going to have many descendants from his lineage. And really, he didn't trust God. When you go through this here and find that God had to go ahead and step in anyway. But the Lord, verse 17, but the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. God's protecting Abraham as he said he's going to do. Abraham didn't trust God. And not only that, but also, Abram casts doubt on all believers in God. And in fact, Pharaoh could turn around to Abram and knows what Abraham, Pharaoh does. In verse 18. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. You almost can read here of Pharaoh's anger and kind of like, look what you've done to me. Look at that position you put me in. And he is right. Abraham's wrong in all of this here. And not only that, but also, as it turns out, in this situation, it seemed like at least the unbeliever, Pharaoh had better morals than the believer did. And go down to verse 20. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all they had. Pharaoh is the one that actually stands out in this here as being the person that had the higher morals, actually, in this passage. And then you think about also Joseph, with Potiphar's wife. Now here was a woman that basically saying, I'm a willing partner, and nobody else is going to know about it. Now, whether or not that last part's ever going to be true, you know, that's probably not, but at least the argument was, nobody's being harmed by this here. It's okay. However, what was Joseph's response? Genesis 39 verse 9, there's no one greater in this house than I, nor has kept back anything from me but you because you're his wife. Now then, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What was the answer here? It didn't matter. It didn't matter if she was a willing partner. It didn't matter if nobody else ever found out about it. What mattered was God would know about it. That's true. About any kind of situation people try to put themselves in or make up these hypothetical situations where nobody else getting hurt or nobody else will know, God knows. And God still says it's wrong. And therefore we have to keep that in mind. And so I said before that basically no one can sin in a way so as to make it right. It's what the Bible points out to us in many different situations. Over in Ezekiel 18 verse 4, God said, behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father's will, the soul of the Son is mine, the soul of sin shall die. The soul of sin shall die. He didn't say, unless you are in the right situation, or unless it's okay with you. Sin is sin no matter who you are. And therefore you cannot sin in a way that's right. Over in Romans, the second chapter, verse 13, and talking about the law of God being good. Now Deuteronomy 6, verse 4 talks about the law of God being for our good. But here in Romans 2 verse 13, he said, for the hearers of the law are just for God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles which have not the law do by nature things contain the law, these having not the law are law to themselves. That's the idea of morality, of God giving us a system of morality, which is show the work of the law written in the hearts, their conscience also being witness, and the thought and their thoughts the mean while that's also meanwhile accusing them or else excusing one another. And that is that, okay, that we have a law to tell us what's right or wrong. And even those who didn't have the law, even the Gentiles, knew there were things that are right or wrong because God has spoken to them. And therefore we understand there are things that are right and wrong. And so the very foundation of situation ethics really is this idea of evolution. They take God out of the picture and we're simply here because of time and chance. And again, kind of quoting one of the sources that if man's just an animal, then there's no real standard and reason for being morally good. If God created man, then it's our reason for living and being here. And that's really what it comes down to. And so Ecclesiastes 3 verse 11 says, he has made everything beautiful in his time. He has put eternity in our hearts. They said that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Eternity in our hearts. Man is an eternal being, is what the psalmist is saying in this passage. The atheist, strange enough, you know, you heard the atheist prayer. And the atheist prayer is, oh God, if there is God, save my soul if I have a soul. You know, just in case I know and pray to you, just in case you're there, and just in case, I don't really don't believe either one, but just in case. Now I'm not the kind of person that would say, do something just in case you may be wrong. But keep this in mind, no one's ever going to be disappointed that has led a life according to God's word after they die. I'll stand behind that statement. However, as you think about this, if the atheist is right, for instance, and I'm not the kind of person that do this just to hedge your bets. I think that's a bad philosophy. And that's wrong. But the fact is, if the atheist is right, then you won't feel anything at all. If the atheist is right, then when he dies, that's it, right? If he's wrong, he will know the flames of hell. Why? Because of not believing God. If the believer in God is wrong, he won't feel anything either. Why? Because, okay, the God doesn't exist. If he's wrong. However, if he's right, he has the reward of heaven. That kind of points it in the possible situations, the outcomes of each one. Now again, we believe God exists. I'm not saying do what the Bible says just in case. I'm just saying, where if the God exists, but that shows you the atheists risk their soul. That they don't even acknowledge it exists. And so the religion of humanism basically says there's no standard. But the person who believes in God says our standard is divine, given to us by God. That's how we know what right and wrong is. And that's what God's going to judge us with on the day of judgment. I appreciate your kind attention in this lesson. And one of the things, again, we hear a lot about situation ethics. And we have to understand it's not a hedging of the bets, but a desire to please God and go to heaven. That's our song that we had a few minutes ago, Sing to Me in Heaven. That's where we desire to go. And so if there's anything to know tonight that we can help you with in obeying God or any sin perhaps that needs to be prayed for, any reason for our prayers, why don't you let us know as we stand as we sing.